From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, did political interference play a role in Jeffrey Berman resigning as U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, or was it resisting the effort to protect religious freedom? The House Judiciary Committee today holding a hearing looking into political interference from the Department of Justice. Committee member and chairman of the Republican Study Committee, Congressman Mike Johnson, is here with more in just a moment. And does the number 200 mean anything to you? It does if you're counting federal judges. The Trump administration successfully placing 200 judges onto the federal bench. What kind of judges? And how significant is the number? Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, is here with the answer. And the lawlessness continues as mobs attempt to tear down statues here in D.C. and across the country.
We thank God that all kinds of imperfect people have made us a more perfect union. And when the dust settles, it is never, never the mobs or bullies whom we honor. It is the brave leaders who confront them.
We'll talk more about that later here on Washington Watch. Also, David Clawson will join me as we discuss a biblical view of history. How should Christians approach this attack on history that is sweeping across American cities? That and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. And again, I want to thank all of those listening who have partnered with us as we come down to the end of our fiscal year, as I've said all week. Just reminding you that we are here broadcasting on about 400 stations across the nation Monday through Friday and even on Saturday because of partners like you. We receive no government money, none whatsoever. We are supported 100% by folks like you who care about America, care about faith, family, and freedom. And so we have some generous donors that have put together a $1 million challenge gift. And the effect is your contribution is doubled. So if you'd like to make a contribution and stand with us today, I've got team members standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008, or as always, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and make a donation online. Again, that number, 800-225-4008. All right, every move that is made by this administration is spun, twisted, made into a conspiracy. And over the weekend, Jeffrey Berman, who was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District, resigned. Now, there was some question whether he resigned, whether he was fired, some claiming that he was fired by William Barr to protect associates of President Trump. But it appears the evidence now is emerging that the real reason is because he refused to sign a letter to Mayor de Blasio protesting the mistreatment of those engaging in the exercise of religious freedom. That and other topics coming up today in the House Judiciary Committee. Joining me now with more is a member of the committee and the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's always a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
Every move that is made by this administration is spun, is taken out of context, a conspiracy is placed behind it. As the oversight hearing was held today, looking into the issue of political interference by the Department of Justice into the operations of staff attorneys, there's a lot of smoke, but I don't see any fire.
There isn't any fire, Tony, and I used my time in the hearing today, this morning, that's still going on. I've stepped out to speak with you. To point out that the whole hearing is a farce, you know, with all of the pressing issues facing the country right now, with the tearing down of monuments, the assault on our history and unrest in the streets and everything else, all that is within the jurisdiction of the House Judiciary Committee. And yet we are wasting time now going after the Department of Justice. I mean, this is just another page in the playbook, the tired, old, worn out playbook of the Democrats here. To do exactly what you said, they are in an all-out assault on President Trump, on his Attorney General Barr and the Department of Justice, and they're accusing Attorney General Barr of exactly what the Obama administration, Eric Holder and company, did. Barr is not politicizing the DOJ. He's trying to clean up the messes that the other side made, and yet they're in the majority in the House. They have the majority in this committee, and Chairman Nadler and company are are doing what they do best, and that is try to obscure the facts and go after Trump, because it's the only page they have in that playbook.
I think that's extremely important that people understand that what happens when you come and you clean up, you have a lot of career attorneys that work in the Department of Justice that have been there, you know, not just the last 8 years, but even before that, that were, you know, left of center. And they had a political agenda, as we saw with Peter Strzok and others, you know, all the evidence that's come out about them. It's clear that there was a political agenda by some in the Department of Justice. So when you go in to clean it up, it's going to create a conflict, quite frankly. And, of course, the media is yeah. all too eager to say, take the side of those who are actually being cleaned up and pushed out.
I think that's very well said. And the irony and the outrage of the day, the latest, is that one of the witnesses, one of these supposed, you know, they paint these witnesses out to be, you know, patriots who are doing their civic duty. These are career DOJ lawyers who are coming forward now to blow the whistle. One of the guys they brought in, of the three witnesses the Democrats produced today, one of them has a record of having requested to leave the DOJ to serve on the impeachment inquest against Trump. I mean, there's not even an appearance of lack of bias. I mean, it's just very clear what's going on here, and the American people can see it, and I think a growing number of them are very, very frustrated by all of this.
So, Congressman Johnson, let me ask you specifically about this case with Jeffrey Berman, who served as the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, back and forth over the weekend. First he said he resigned, then it was said he was fired. Bottom line, there were those saying that he was pushed out because the attorney general was trying to protect President Trump's friends like Rudy Giuliani. But what happened the night before, there was a letter from the attorney general that Berman was asked to sign. Eric Dryban, who is a frequent guest on this program, who is Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, also asked to sign the letter to the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, criticizing the mayor for placing major restrictions on religious gatherings while at the same time encouraging these protests in the streets. And Berman refused to sign the letter, and as a result, according to reports in The Hill and others, that this was the straw that broke the camel's back for William Barr, the attorney general. Does he not have the right to have attorneys working for him that will actually follow the directions that he gives?
There's no question about that. And if you look at the applicable law, actually there's federal statute right on point, 28 U.S.C. Section 541. It's very clear that Attorney General Barr acted appropriately in carrying out Berman's removal. Now, the president under that statute has the power clearly to appoint and to remove U.S. attorneys. If he appoints his attorney general with that authority to do so, then that's perfectly appropriate. In this case, that may very well have been the reason. It may have been insubordination. They're trying to do Berman a favor by not allowing him to resign amicably. And there was a conversation reportedly the attorney general had with Berman. They had agreed that he would step aside so the president could appoint someone who's already Senate confirmed, by the way, as U.S. attorney. That's SEC Chairman Jay Clayton, who's eminently qualified for the position. But the Trump administration even reportedly offered Berman a different position in the administration. There's a vacant position for assistant AG for the criminal division. I mean, they were going to move him over and allow him a soft landing. And yet, you know, I think He got stiff-necked about it, and it turned into this a bit of a mess. But look, there's no question at all. It's very clear under the law, the president and the attorney general acted appropriately. They had every right to do that, and it is not out of step with what previous attorney generals have done.
I would just say also that it's in keeping with this administration. I'm not surprised by this at all, because in my conversations with Attorney General Barr and in his actions repeatedly, he has made, as the president has put forth the direction, he has made religious freedom, domestic religious freedom, a top priority of their administration. And so at every turn, they're addressing this inappropriate restrictions being placed on people of faith.
No question about it. And we applaud President Trump for not just using the protection of religious liberty as a, you know, a platform or campaign talking point, as others have done in the past. He is fiercely committed to it. And you know, Tony, he's spoken to you about it. He's spoken to me many times about how important that is to him, how essential he understands that is to all of us as Americans. And the fact that they would be consistent in all their actions in doing that is a great encouragement to people of faith all around this country, of every faith, to know that, that our first liberty will remain intact so long as this president is at the helm.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, Congressman Mike Johnson. I almost stumbled on my own name there. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, my guest. He's the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, also a member of the House Judiciary Committee. Just a couple more moments left here with you, Mike, and I appreciate you stepping out of the committee to join us. Big news this morning with the case against General Flynn being dropped, the criminal case, that those charges being dropped. How significant is that?
It was a bombshell, and it was so ironic and even poetic, Tony, that it came out this morning, just a couple of hours before our Judiciary Committee hearing began on the supposed abuses in the Department of Justice and all of this. Look, the appeals court for the District of Columbia handed down a really solid opinion. It's very strongly worded. I mean, in a way that has surprised some folks, but they have upheld the dropping of charges against General Flynn, and they have some really strong language in here. They point out that the district court judge that was trying to resist this dropping of the charges has no power. He can't deny a prosecutor's motion to dismiss charges based on his disagreement with the prosecution's exercise of the charging authority. That's a quote. It's in this Court of Appeals opinion that is quoting the U.S. Supreme Court. In other words, what they're saying is this was so irregular and so out of bounds for a district court judge to misunderstand his role and try to impose these extra rules and restrictions on Flynn. The DOJ decided that in light of all the information that had come out since this case started, with the abuses in the FBI, the setup that they had of General Flynn, an American hero, that the ongoing prosecution was totally inappropriate. The charges should be dropped. And now the appeals court has agreed that that was exactly what should have happened.
This, once again, underscores, unfortunately, but it underscores the role of the judges, the increasingly important role or influential role, I should say, that judges play in our society. I mean, they've always been important that they be men and women of integrity, adhering to the law and the Constitution. But you see, when those that are given to the political winds, they can corrupt justice. But fortunately, the appellate court seeing the right way to go.
Absolutely. We have to have judges on these federal courts who understand and adhere to the rule of law, who apply the Constitution as unbiased umpires, as is often said. And there's too few of those. We have a lot of activist judges. I think the district judge in this case is one of them. I think his actions show it. And now you have a couple of judges on the appellate court agreeing that he was just far out of bounds. And they point out on the first couple of pages of this opinion that in light of the newly discovered evidence of misconduct by the FBI, this prosecution can no longer go forward. They can't continue to go after General Flynn. He was set up. Everybody knows it now. And to administer justice here, you've got to move on.
Very good. Congressman Mike Johnson, we've got to move on as well. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you.
And folks, we're back to talk more about judges right after this break. Don't go away. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership and Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, folks standing by, if you'd like to partner with us to keep this message of Washington Watch coming to you each day, Monday through Friday, and on Saturdays, give us a call, 800-225-4008. This will be pretty much our last week as we're moving toward the end of our fiscal year end, and we want to finish strong because we want to start strong. So 800-225-4008, members of our team standing by to take your call. All right, earlier today, President Trump reached another milestone as his 200th federal judge nominee was confirmed.
Once we confirm Judge Wilson today, the Senate will have confirmed 200 of President Trump's nominees to lifetime appointments on the federal bench. And following number 200, when we depart this chamber today, there will not be a single circuit court vacancy anywhere in the nation for the first time in at least 40 years.
That was Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor earlier today. Judge Wilson will be elevated to a seat on the New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit, a Circuit Court of Appeal. Trump's dedication to nominating judges has been one of the greatest strengths, I think, of this administration. Joining me now to talk more about this and the significance of this milestone is FRC's Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
So why is this significant?
Tony, the significance of the federal courts and the federal judiciary has just been one of the stories of our modern political times in America. I mean, this is an ongoing issue. It's come up, the importance of judges. It come up again in discussion with the Bostock ruling last week from the Supreme Court. So this is something we can celebrate. 200 federal court nominees. Corey Wilson confirmed 52-48, the 200th nominee to a federal appeals court deciding important questions. So, you know, these are important because the courts have injected themselves into social issues, and we need to return back to an originalist perspective, getting the courts out of social policymaking, interpreting laws in the Constitution. That's why it's so important to us and so important to the other side that they try to have policymakers on the bench.
Okay, Travis, I want to address the elephant in the room here. That's a figure of speech. There's not room for an elephant in our studio here. But you mentioned the Bostock case. That was the case last week issued by the Supreme Court, which redefined the word sex. the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which very clear, the court itself admitted that when it was passed, the reference was to biological sex of male-female. This is not just a matter of filling vacancies. I mean, we're not celebrating 200 vacancies on the court filled. We're talking about the quality of the individuals. Now, I am now disappointed in Gorsuch, who was put onto the court, because I think he – in fact, we played a clip last week where I think he misrepresented himself before the Senate Judiciary Committee. But tell our listeners, is there reason to truly celebrate the type of judges that have been put onto the bench?
I think there is, because when we look at President Trump's record, President Trump, Leader McConnell doing a great job with these nominees being confirmed – broadly, these are originalists. These are textualists. These are nominees who will decide the facts, decide the case before them, not make law. I think we've talked about how the Bostic decision was a mistake. But the answer to this is to hone in on and double down on the right approach that a judge should have and not walk away from the importance of judges overall, of nominees overall. So, you know, the record right now, overall successful for President Trump. We're celebrating 200 judges of a largely successful approach. And that's something people should continue supporting from the Christian and social conservative movement.
So to use a sports analogy, which I should not do since I'm not a big sports fan, but I will anyway, you know, let's say baseball, you strike out. Do you quit?
We're not quitting. And we're not quitting. You know, the Bostic decision was a setback. Tony, we're going to have five decisions that FRC is monitoring in the next few weeks from the Supreme Court. We could get some tomorrow from the court, including the Russo case from Louisiana, dealing with Louisiana's abortion law, and a number of other religious freedom cases. These are all important. And these cases are testaments to why we need the right approach from judges on the Supreme Court and lower federal courts.
Now, we have, by the way, folks, I want to make this available again. It is the list of accomplishments from the Trump administration on all of these issues when it comes to judges, when it comes to religious liberty, when it comes to life. And it's quite extensive. And you can get a copy of that. 51555, the number to text. If you want to text me, the number 51555, the word actions. Some of you already have this, but it's being updated on a regular basis. Text me the word actions, that's plural, to 51555, and I'll send you that list. But of all of those things, judges are going to be the most lasting.
They're the most lasting, and they impact multiple issues, right? Because we talk about the impact on the pro-life issue from a nominee, also religious freedom, and the proper approach to the Constitution overall and the separation of powers, in addition to lifetime tenure. All those reasons are important reasons to pay attention to nominees and judges.
And I've had this conversation with the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He has made the focus. In fact, the Democrats lamenting the fact that President Trump and Majority Leader Mitch McConnell have made judges the focus of their efforts in the Senate.
They don't like that Leader McConnell, President Trump have been successful in confirming these nominees. They can't stand it. That's why they want to win the election, to be able to block these originalists and textualists from continuing to be confirmed. And we don't know what openings we might get in the Supreme Court. This is a crucial time in our nation's modern history.
Well, especially important given what's unfolding even now that I'm going to talk about in just a few moments, the lawlessness that is gripping our society. And this is what Mitch McConnell said earlier today as well. He said, as I've said many times, our work with the administration to renew our federal courts is not a partisan or political victory. It is a victory for the rule of law and for the Constitution of itself.
We're protecting those institutions long term with these nominees, Tony. It's crucial to that effort.
All right, Travis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
With good news. All right, folks, when we come back, I want to turn my attention to something that's gotten the attention of a lot of folks. It's what's been happening in the wake of the riots, where folks were tuned in to police brutality, and now they've shifted their focus, not to peaceful protesters, but those who are not peaceful. They've turned their attention to an attempt to purge U.S. history by toppling statues. We're going to talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, just 2 weeks after being deactivated and sent home, 400 National Guard troops were reactivated today here in D.C. to protect statues and monuments targeted for toppling and defacement by mobs. Dozens of statues have been toppled after the non-peaceful protesters turned their focus from police brutality and defunding law enforcement to the purging of U.S. history. Now, yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell went to the Senate floor and delivered what I thought was an insightful speech on the topic and issued a warning about the toleration of lawlessness. Listen to this. Play clip number three.
Recent days have reminded us it's not just our present-day debates that far-left radicals want to overwhelm. They also want to rewrite the past. Back in 2017, when people wondered whether our important conversations over Confederate monuments would give the far-left a broader taste for pulling down statues, major newspapers and media figures literally mocked that concern. They said there were obvious differences between rebel generals and our nation's founders. They said nobody would come gunning for Washington or Jefferson. Well, the far left missed the memo. A few days ago in Portland, Oregon, a mob graffitied a statue of our first president, pulled it down, and burned an American flag over his head. This is George Washington. Another Washington statue was defaced in Baltimore. A statue of Thomas Jefferson was ripped down in Portland also. This is the general and first president who built our nation and the author of the Declaration of Independence. Genius statesman who helped begin this grand experiment that has brought freedom to hundreds of millions and saved the world a few times for good measure. And yet a crazy fringe is treating their monuments like vanity statues of ten-horned tyrants. Our founding fathers are being roped to the ground like they were Saddam Hussein.
You know, I appreciate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell going to the floor and addressing this issue, because I do think it's one that needs to be addressed. And we're going to talk about this in the remainder of the program. We're going to talk about, you know, as Christians, how should we respond to this? But to give you a sense of the breadth of this, there have been statues torn down all across America. George Washington, his statue in Chicago was in Washington Park was vandalized. Another is George Washington statue vandalized in Portland, Oregon. Christopher Columbus in Miami. Another Christopher Columbus beheaded and then removed in Boston. Another statue of Christopher Columbus vandalized in Pittsburgh. One torn down in St. Paul, Minnesota. Juan de Onate, thought to support racism. He was actually the governor of Mexico. He was vandalized. Another statue of his was vandalized. A statue of a former Tennessee lawmaker knocked over. Confederate statue of Albert Pike torn down by protesters and burned. A statue of President Ulysses S. Grant defaced and knocked over in San Francisco. Statues of Junipero Serra, who was a Catholic priest, canonized as a saint, founded the first of nine of the 20 Spanish missions in California, was knocked over in Los Angeles. In fact, several states, several communities removing his statue. I mean, the list goes on and on. Matthias Baldwin, an abolitionist, his statue in Philadelphia was defaced. Theodore Roosevelt, removed by New York Mayor Bill de Blasio because people felt it stood for racism. And several statues by Christopher Columbus were removed by elected officials. This is a dangerous process of trying to purge. It's a purge of U.S. history. Now, why is that important? Well, I'm going to talk about that, but first I've got another clip that I want to play of Senator McConnell, who shows, I think, a little bit. This clip reveals a little bit about the intent of those who are targeting these statues. Play clip number four.
Now, like any cultural revolution, this far-left anger is sparing some heroes of their own. I understand that in Seattle, a large statue of Vladimir Lenin stands quite untouched. Apparently, people claim with a straight face that this communist statue has survived because it is located, wait for it, on private property. So the founding father of the mass-murdering Soviet Union watches over Seattle streets, but our own founding fathers are dragged in the dirt.
Revealing. Very revealing. But it's not stopping there. Actually, in the National Defense Authorization Act, Senator Elizabeth Warren is moving to unilaterally mandate the Department of Defense rename military bases and remove war memorials to the fallen. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri is moving to block that, saying it smacks of the cancel culture the left wants to impose on the nation. And he goes on to say the reality is that this was never about the Confederacy. That's what left-wing activists want us to believe. The events of the last week were rioters, where rioters have attacked American and religious landmarks, tell us otherwise. It only took days for them to move on Grant and Lincoln, and the mob will keep marching through our cultural institutions until every American whom the woke crowd deems unjust is canceled. What are we to make of this? What are we to do about it? We're going to talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership in Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership in love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, we've got team members standing by to take your call if you would like to be among the many who are partnering with the Family Research Council to continue Washington Watch on stations all across America. The number to call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. And just a reminder, you know, we're here only because of people like you across the country who care about faith, family, and freedom. We receive no government money, zero. We are supported strictly by individuals like you. And so if you would like to stand with us and help us continue the message here in our nation's capital, give us a call, 800-225-4008. All right, talking about this wave across the country, literally dozens of monuments, statues removed, defaced, and some might be inclined to say, this is not my debate. I'm going to sit this one out. Well, that's exactly what they want you to do. It makes it easier for those who are using a legitimate concern. And let me underscore, there are some legitimate concerns here. I think slavery is a tremendous blight on the American experiment of freedom. I believe also, I would throw into this, this hasn't been a topic of discussion as of late, but I think our breach of treaties with the Indians is a blight on our record. And these are issues of legitimate concern. But there are those who are taking this legitimate concern and using it for an illegitimate cause, the destruction of our country. Yes, you heard me right. There are those who want to destroy our republic. Now, I'm not talking about those who are peacefully protesting, who I may or may not agree with on all matters, but I support their right to march in the streets and bring attention to the issues at hand peacefully. I support it. Even though I may disagree with them, I support that right. That's what makes America great. But there are some who are using the peaceful protesters as a smokescreen for their own agenda. And don't think for a moment that appeasement will come when mayors and governors step aside and allow the destruction of statues, or has been the case in some jurisdictions where officials themselves have removed the historical figures at the demand of the mobs. If anything, the attempts at appeasement will only increase the demand for more. Case in point, Jeffrey Sean King, the co-founder of Real Justice PAC and promoter of Black Lives Matter movement, tweeted out this week, quote, and I quote, "All murals and stained glass windows of white Jesus and his European mother and their white friends should also come down. They are a gross form of white supremacy, created as tools of oppression, racist propaganda. They should all come down." End quote. Now, I hate to disturb his reality, but Mary wasn't European. Now, the bigger question here is, does the Bible give us any guidance on how we should look at these real and troubling issues? I think so. One of the most significant arguments defending the veracity of Scripture is that it does not candy coat the history of God's people. Look at King David. How many world leaders would pen such revealing personal thoughts? And how many apologists of their leaders would include the lurid details of David's failings? Now, consider even the lineage of Jesus. It includes Judah, who had sex with his daughter-in-law, thinking she was a prostitute. It includes a prostitute and an adulteress. Is it celebrating those immoral behaviors? No. It is celebrating the power of a redemptive God. Real, honest history includes the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is the story of America. The story of history is one of redemption, not perfection. Consider the Apostle Paul, one of the most revered followers of Christ among believers today. In fact, how many churches are named after Paul? I mean, think about St. Paul Cathedral in London. This despite the fact that Paul got his start by killing believers. What about Peter, who denied Jesus three times and abandoned him? Do Christians seek to remove these men from the record of Christianity? No. Or aren't we then celebrating the evil or the mistakes they made? No, we're recognizing them in the redemptive power and the redemptive power of Jesus Christ and the greater good of God. As Christians, we understand that man is fallen and he fails. But we also understand the redemptive nature of God and his plan of sanctification. Paul said it this way in Philippians 3:12, "Not that I have already attained or am already perfected, but I press on, that I may lay hold of that for which Christ Jesus also laid hold of me." See, we're not a perfect union. But we're moving in that direction, and that is a part of our history. What we are seeing is significant, and it is dangerous. Historically, on very few occasions do statues topple alone without governments going with them. This is a time for us to stand firm and strong, acknowledging the failures of America's past, but also embracing its promise for the future. And not allowing those that would seek to purge us of our history in this elusive effort of a utopia, like so many others have tried in communist Russia, Europe, and elsewhere. This is the American experiment. We have to defend it. Joining me now with more thoughts on this is David Clawson. Here at FRC is our Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. In fact, personal experience on this. Last night he was out jogging and was at Lincoln Park, where an effort there to take down a monument of Lincoln and a freed slave was underway. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
It's never a dull moment here in Washington.
It is never a dull moment in the district, no.
So what happened last night?
Yes, you're right. Just trying to get in shape, going on a jog. Three blocks from my house, and it's there's a park called Lincoln Park here in Washington, D.C. And in this park, there is a statue for Abraham Lincoln called the Freedman's Monument. It was erected in April of 1876. And I just jogging by, there's a large crowd. And I stopped to listen to the speakers, and it became very clear listening to the activists who were giving the speeches that they want to tear down this statue of Abraham Lincoln. And so I did a little bit of research on this statue because it's just really interesting. Really, people were very upset and wanting to tear the statue down.
How big was the crowd?
I'd say probably about 200 people, a couple hundred people. There was a large police presence, many African-American police officers that were there as well. And after doing a little bit of research into this monument, it was really interesting because this monument erected in 1876 was actually funded by the first earnings of freed slaves. There were those who had been enslaved, and then after the Civil War, they were so grateful for Abraham Lincoln and the work that he did to free them. They sent money in to build this statue just as an appreciation of what he did. And actually, at the statue's dedication in 1876, Frederick Douglass, the great African-American abolitionist, gave a speech dedicating that. And I actually looked at part of his speech, and this is the line that he used that stood out to me. He said, The reason he was dedicating this monument was that the men of this generation may read, and those of after coming generations may read, something of the exalted character and great works of Abraham Lincoln, the first martyr president of the United States. So this is a monument to Abraham Lincoln. It depicts a slave, a former slave with a shackle that's been ripped off of his arm, and it looks like he's about to stand up after he's been freed from his slavery.
And the goal of those that were gathered there last night was they were planning and stated that Thursday night that statue comes down.
That's what they were saying. And it was a surreal experience, Tony, because right behind the activist who was giving this speech, it was one word in all capital letters. It was emancipation, which is clearly showing that this statue is to Abraham Lincoln and cherishing the ideals of freedom. And that the irony seemed completely lost on the activists who were gathered there last night.
Yeah, I think that it's, as Josh Hawley said about the renaming of military bases and establishments, this is the cancel culture gone mad. It's like the French Revolution. This is what we're seeing. It's this revolutionary mindset that has no basis in fact or history. But so I want to push the pause button on what is happening at present. And I want to go back to what I was talking about just a few moments ago, and that's the kind of the biblical perspective here. You know, throughout Scripture, there is a repeated emphasis on history. I mean, God instructs His people to know their history and to teach their history, the good, the bad, the ugly. Why is that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Antonio. You know, as Christians, we want to think carefully about history, and the study of history is the study of fallen individuals, sinful people. And as Christians, we have those categories. And so, of course, I'm not here to defend every statue and every monument that's been put up in this country. But, you know, rather than erase history, I think we should learn from it. And that desire is what animates people throughout history to erect these monuments to begin with. The example, Tony, that came to my mind was in Joshua 4, when Joshua has, you know, he's taken over leadership from Moses, and he leads the people into the promised land. And as soon as they cross the Jordan River, what does he tell the people? He tells them to erect a memorial of 12 stones. And this is in Joshua 4. And he says, when your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you can tell to them the great acts of salvation of the Lord your God. And so you see that throughout Scripture that God's people are told to remember their history. And, you know, not all of our history is good, but we need to remember it so we can learn from it.
You know, history reveals the fallen nature of man.
Yes.
And man's need for a Savior. And that's why I think the left is so hostile to history, because in a world driven by a humanist worldview, there's no room for man to acknowledge his falling short and his need of redemption. That's why, I mean, it's totally opposite of the evolution of man that we're told, that we're evolving to a higher state, when in fact it is very clear that we are not evolving to a higher state. So in order to keep a reference from being made to past and looking at the history of man, which seems to repeat itself over and over, that refutes this evolutionary view and humanist view of man.
No, it really does, Tony. And like you said, you know, in the biblical worldview, again, it gives us these categories of understanding that man is fallen. And just in our own history, just look at the 200 plus years of American history that we have made serious mistakes. You referenced them at the beginning of this segment with slavery and breaking treaties with Indians. But it doesn't help to just completely whitewash and the New York Times and the 1619 Project, you know, where they're trying to go back and tell a revisionist view of history. And that doesn't help anyone. And I think that it's just important to shed a light on this. We can't give in to the anarchists that are trying not just to throw certain statues over. They're trying to get rid of everything.
Right.
And I think that shows the underlying goals of what they're trying to do.
So as Christians, as followers of Jesus in the year 2020, when all of this is unfolding, this cultural chaos, this effort to purge history, should we be bystanders or should we give testimony to the truth and in a loving way, but in a unyielding way, say we cannot tolerate this lawlessness?
Yeah, we can't tolerate the lawlessness. And as Christians, I think we need to be absolutely engaged in these conversations. And it's just difficult because the culture right now, if anyone seems to, you know, want to put up their hand and have a conversation, they're immediately labeled as a racist or a homophobe. And I think we need to get back to the place where we can have political discourse in this country, or we can have these conversations without being immediately smeared as someone who's a racist and doesn't care about, you know, legitimate issues that we're debating right now in our culture.
And that clearly is the case. Again, it smacks of the same tactics in the same unfolding of the French Revolution, the cancel culture, just like the guillotine. Yeah. But we cannot shrink back in fear or intimidation because this is very sobering, and I'm not given to hyperbole. I think what is at stake here is the Republic as we know it, and those that know the truth and can give testimony to the truth, if we sit back in silence out of fear, I do believe that we could lose the Republic as we know it.
And like you said, Tony, often when these statues topple, it's not just the statues or the monuments, it's the governments as well. And that's why I think that we need to be raising this issue. We need to be engaged in this conversation. And as a nation that's governed, it's for the people and by the people. We cannot stand for the lawlessness that we're seeing on the streets. And that's why I appreciate what the president has said,
yes,
that we're not going to stand. He's not going to sit idly by and allow these things to be toppled without having any sort of conversation.
And that's in direct contrast to what many mayors and governors are doing around the country, who are just stepping back and allowing the mobs to tear down these statues and monuments. David Clawson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tony.
And folks, thank you for joining us. And let me again encourage you to be praying for our nation this coming Sunday, Call to Fall. What a time to fall on our knees and turn to an all-powerful and forgiving and healing God. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.